Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is not the theme song of the New Republican Party. This is True True Love by the Corvairs. Welcome to Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. I have left Area 4. What's the area that I was in, Beowulf? I forgot where I was. Four what? I was in Area 51. I'm no longer in Area 51. I'm in Area 52 now. Ready to go on Rock and Roll Friday. There are so many stories that even I don't know where to begin, and I never said that. How many things can I look at and say, where do I start? Let's start with this one. Jesse Jackson says Britain should apologize for slavery. I mean, this takes the cake. I guess the pickings have gotten pretty slim over here in the U.S., so you figure he'll try the weaklings over there in Britain, see if he can shake them down for a few pounds. The tree is... worn a little slim here. All of the greenbacks have dried up on the trees of America. So Jackson says Britain should apologize for slavery. Why doesn't he go to the heart of it all and say that Saudi Arabia should apologize for slavery and try to shake them down? Why does he try to shake the sheiks? Because they're the ones who engaged in the slave trade. Does he understand that, or he realizes they're a little too tough for him, that the men made of granite with headscarves wouldn't put up with it for 1 second while the men who descend from men who wear white wigs and stockings will. Is that a story you want to talk about? Don't call me, because I said everything I intend to say about this topic. Jesse Jackson, hear it from me. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are two of the biggest connivers I've ever seen in my life. Why do I say that? Because 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago, three black college students were executed by illegal aliens who cut the face off one of the children with a machete. They had nothing to say. Instead, they attack radio talk show hosts and Britain. I guess they're softer targets. Charging that ethnic minorities are still underrepresented in the British government and economy? So-called U.S. civil rights activist Jesse Jackson has called on the country to atone for its role. Oh, he's touring Britain. Ah, he's touring Britain to launch a social initiative aimed at tackling... I can't read this anymore. Play the rock and roll again. I'm through with this story. I'm in a sweat. Like Vietnam, Iraq is an ideological fight, says Bush. President Bush on Wednesday compared the war in Iraq to other wars the United States has fought, like World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. The war in Iraq is an ideological struggle and part of the war on terror. Well, if it is so, Mr. Bush, why don't you just say what the ideologues are? Why don't you just say the world of freedom, which is ours, with all of its flaws, and the world of Islamic fascism, with none of its goodness, because there is no goodness in Islamic fascism. And he doesn't use the word Islamofascism anymore. None. He won't talk about it. He says it's an ideological struggle, but he doesn't tell you who we're struggling against, which is why we're going to lose the war, because we've lost it already. Play the rock and roll again. That's all. All right, this song, break this record. I can't stand it. How about Who Put the Bomb with the Viscounts? Is that any better than this one on Rock and Roll Friday? Break it. How about Heartaches by the Marcells? God, this was so bad. It rotted the mind of a whole generation. Off. Giuliani urged to back anti-quota laws to win conservative support. I would say har, har, hardy, har, har. To help win over skeptical conservatives, Republican presidential hopeful Rudy Giuliani no relationship to Ed Jew, should support state ballot initiatives. I'm sorry. Should support state ballot initiatives against racial and sexual discrimination, says a prominent civil rights activist. Well, he's right. Ward Connolly is back in the news, I guess, and he's right. But you know that Rudy Giuliani is a big city liberal. He's never going to do it. 1-800-449-8255. Now go on my website because I've got two great stories up there that I am going to talk about now that I've warmed myself up to a certain extent. First, I got to find michaelsavage.com. It's way down on my favorites list here. Here it is. Killings cast light on an Italian mob was the headline that was up earlier. This was a headline in this morning's Los Angeles Times with one of the most stunning photographs I've seen in a long time. It's of grieving widows, mothers and grandmothers, in Calabria, in a town in Calabria. It's one of the most amazing stories that I have read about gangsterism. Let's put it to you that way. Three coffins were delivered to a waiting town just before dusk. Old men and women, their tough-looking sons and their grieving neighbors, filled the main square and stood in near silence as church bells tolled and a police helicopter hovered above. And if you read the story, which I suggest you do over the weekend, I mean, it's amazing. Let's say you're interested in The Sopranos. Let's put it in the American parlance. The Sopranos are chicken feed compared to these guys, according to this story. According to this story, the Calabresi have overtaken the Sicilians in this field of endeavor. And they've gone out of drug trading into gun running and weapons smuggling as the new big money. And the reason the story made it to the front of the LA Times is because there was a machine gun execution in Germany last week, where one gang of Calabresi killed another gang of Calabresi because someone in that gang of Calabresi had accidentally killed the wife of one of them while trying to kill him. And this has gone on back and forth. So you got to read this because you'll see what the priest says in the town. You'll see what the mothers of some of the slain men or boys say, that we don't want any vendetta here because the whole town will be wiped out. But it's an amazingly well-written story, to be frank with you. To the right on michaelsavage.com for your reading edification is this underpriced at $100 million. And you'll see pictures of some of the most stunning $100-plus million estates in the United States of America. And they're worth looking at. There's one in Lake Tahoe. There's one in Bel Air, California. There's a whole story about how the upper end market has not been touched, really, by the downturns that we're seeing in the lower end of the market. 2 years ago, at the peak of the real estate boom, only a handful of homes in the United States had ever been listed for $75 million, let alone $100 million. Even the highest residential sale to date, investor Ron Barron's $103 million purchase earlier this year of a 40-acre compound in East Hampton, New York, was never publicly listed. The deal was so secret that the brokers weren't named. And they talk about the five contenders for the current prize, including a Beverly Hills compound once owned by William Randolph Hearst and Marion Davies that's listed for $165 million. The Aspen home of Saudi Prince Bandar bin Sultan, $135 million, and an estate overlooking Lake Tahoe with a staircase model after the one aboard the Titanic at $100 million. All have come on the market since summer of 06. And, of course, none of us can afford these houses, but it's beautiful to see that the rich are getting richer and that everybody feels good above this certain watermark. And it's an interesting read to see that there's a couple of different Americas. And that's all. The pictures are nice. But I want to ask you something. You know, when you think about a house like this, $100 million plus, would you want to own it? I mean, do you know what it's like to staff a house like that? Do you have any idea what it is to keep a house like that running? Do you know how many people you need to have working for you? Do you have any idea what kind of security you need to live there? I mean, is it tranquil or does it create its own ferment? In other words, at a certain point, the tranquility you're going to buy by walling yourself off in a large estate is counteracted by the amount of staff you need to run it and the risk you run with the staff you bring into your own home. You follow me or not? Why am I doing? Now, let's go back to old rock and roll. No one cares about these stories. It's dead in the water. It's late August at the Hotel Savage here. This is Savagito's Way. Used to be known as the Savage Nation, but after the protest, I have changed the name of the song to Savagito's Way, and that is going to be the new name of this show. I want to be more appropriate for the illegal aliens in this country so they don't think I'm a bad guy. And so in honor of Savagito's Way, we're going to play Pata Vivia, go to break, come back and take your calls. Not yet, though, because right now what I'm going to do, because I want to do it, is go to Los Angeles to 8:30 on the dial. By the way, if you're in L.A., and you forget where to find me. I know it's very hard because it's like in between this station and that station. After I go off the air, it switches to Mexican. I am live 8:30 on the dial, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. on the great KLAA, and I've been all over the buses down there. Let's go to that station right now in Los Angeles. MJ, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm just another woman calling in who's in love with you. I think you're fabulous. You're nothing but a fabulous brain. I respect your education. And
It's like Donovan's brain on the radio.
I listen to you all the time. I even listen to your reruns in the middle of the night.
Oh, that you really have it bad down there. L.A. can't be that devoid of human beings.
You know, Dr. Savage, I'm an RN. I went back to school working full-time, got my bachelor's, my master's degree. I totally respect the amount of education you have. I could sit and listen to you around the clock.
MJ, let me ask you, are doctors today like they were, like with Ben Casey in the 50s? Remember, it was a TV. I don't know. How old are you?
I'd like to say 25, but I can't say that.
All right, so you're over 30. Do you remember the series in the 1950s, or did you ever hear of it called Ben Casey, MD?
Yes, I do.
All right, that show popularized being a doctor for thousands upon thousands of people wanted to be a doctor because that show glorified a doctor. And it was a very good show, and it drove a lot of good people into medicine. Today, unfortunately, there are no shows driving young men or women into any field of any nobility whatsoever. It teaches them to go into fields where they can make a quick buck or whatever, and I don't need to go down that road. But are the doctors that you meet today, the younger ones, more like Ben Casey or more like the type that would cut out an organ and sell it on the side?
Wow, that's a lot of
Hold on. Think about it. I'll get back to me in a minute. Play Rock and Roll on the way out because so far the audience isn't in the tent. You know how I describe – there you go. They're not in the tent yet. I told you, it's like, turn that off for 1 minute. I know I'm running late, but I don't care. I'm sweating here in the undershirt. I flew back from Area 51. I'm in Area 52. Cars, planes, cars, dogs with me. I had Teddy and Tasha with me, incidentally, in my hidden location. It's the only reason I was able to survive. I mean, eating that old food that I found and sleeping on the mat wasn't too good. But I'm back now to Area 52. And the fact of the matter is, I'll tell you when I come back. Play the music again. My cup of tea. It's too exciting. Welcome to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Let's see. What do we have on the website here? I got told you already where I am in L.A. It's a big market. I mean, they should know where I am in between. I'm stuck between Mexican baseball after me, and I don't even know who comes before me, but it's a great station. I mean, that's where I am. Investigators recommend dropping charges against another Haditha Marine. That is good. Another Marine that was set up for a fall by Tim McGurk of Time Magazine, in my opinion, and Jack Murtha, who's the biggest pork barrel recipient in Congress, who needs to be investigated, along with his cohorts who are in the war profiteering business. And in order to throw the people off their track, they picked on these poor expendables. You know, the real Marines, as opposed to that fat piece of garbage, phony fake Marine Jack Murtha, the big hero in his own mind. Remember when Jack Murtha started all this accusation business, all of the lib spineless scum who would probably drop their drawers if a backfire occurred from a car going by? They were, oh, he's an actual Marine. You know, he fought Vietnam. He's a real Marine. Oh, he knows that they did. Oh, he's a real Marine. We like this Marine because he's a turncoat. He's our kind of guy. That's the kind of Marine we like, is a turncoat Marine. Not those other yucky ones from the South who actually shoot and kill the enemy. No, we like a turncoat slob Marine who makes money. That's our kind of guy. You think it's funny? I won't rest until Jack Murtha is in a pair of handcuffs if he is tried and found guilty. But why would the Republicans not investigate Jack Murtha when he's the biggest recipient of pork barrel spending in the United States Congress? Why is it that these schmuck Republicans permit their own members to go to jail like a real war hero, such as the one who's got away, put away for 8 years? 8 years, and he took chump change compared to the what's going on the Democrat side. Does anyone remember his name? Who am I talking about from San Diego? Duke Cunningham? The guy was like, he took chump change, a busted Rolls Royce that Marvin the Dentist wouldn't drive in Detroit. A busted Rolls Royce worth about $9,000 he took from the guy who was smearing him off. And a house swap that made him a couple of $100,000. And for that, he went away 8 years because he did it stupidly. Why? Because Duke Cunningham was a real honest-to-goodness American hero who was seduced by a fork-tongued defense contractor. Yeah, he committed a crime, but not 8 years worth. And you know who did this to him? The U.S. attorney down there did this to him. And I hope they fired that U.S. attorney. I hope she was one of the vicious ones thrown out in her keister because she was anti-military and anti-American. I know who it was. I won't even mention a name because you'll take it as a racial thing when it has nothing racial involved at all. It's all political. My point is that Duke Cunningham gets put away for 8 years. He's the Republican, blah, blah, blah. And you got Democrats now doing business that make what he did nothing, and there's no investigation. Why is that? Because the Republicans really have no power, and the Republicans don't even have the ability to not only run their own party, but to run this country. They truly don't. You see what I'm saying? No? Rick, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. The approval rating of Congress is down to 28% or lower, and it's all because of you, and I love everything you say against them.
Yeah, right. It's all because of me. Well, no, it's lower than Bush. I know that. People said to me, Bush has an approval rating of 32%. I said, no, that's his IQ at dinner last night. They said, no, it's his approval rating. I said, no, it's his IQ.
Yeah.
But I said, but if you think his IQ is 32, I said, the IQ of Congress is 14. Nancy Pelosi has single-handedly destroyed the reputation of the U.S. Congress because they understand she came out with one set of words and what she did was another. It's the most corrupt Congress in American history, but there's no investigation of the Democrats. That's the problem.
Savage.
People deserve to know that their presidency is not for sale, the Lincoln bedroom is not for rent, and lobbyist money can no longer influence policy in the House or the Senate. The problem with nostalgia is what we tend to do.
Turn this bum off, will you? Here's John Edwards, one of the biggest trial lawyers in American history, to try to pull the wool over the American people. See, this guy got away with this. He had toothless people, like deliverance people in juries. He handpicked them. So you get a kid born with a cleft palate. He gets people, and anyone with an IQ higher than two digits, he would throw off the jury. He would get the people out of shacks up in the Smoky Mountains, and he'd bring them in, and he'd say, now, this here cleft palate was not caused by God because God is good. God doesn't cause cleft palates. This was caused by this evil, evil, evil Jewish doctor over there, run by this evil hospital owned by Jews. And I want to tell you that the only way to get this child with this cleft palate some modicum of justice is to get those evil Jewish doctors, get them and get them good. Next, I'm not doing this for me. And he did this over and over again, made hundreds of millions of dollars for himself. The kid with the cleft palate probably got I don't know what, very little. And now he's up there as the outsider. Listen to clip 15 if you want a real laugh.
It's controlled by big corporations, the lobbyists they hire to protect their bottom line, and the politicians who curry their favor and carry their
water.
Can
you believe this?
It's perpetuated by a media.
Shut up.
Too often.
Shut up. You know, you're stealing my lines, and I resent it. Okay? You're not in the talk radio business. You're trying to present yourself as an outsider all of a sudden because your campaign has gone up in flames? Your campaign has had lighter fluid poured on it, and you threw the match on it yourself. And you know, the same thing with McCain. I told you that when McCain Kennedy came along with the immigration reform, I said not only would McCain I said McCain is going to lose the Senate seat, which he should. He's a turncoat. McCain, if this was the Revolutionary War, would have worn the coat, the red coat. He would have suddenly switched from being an American fighting the British to fighting with the British against the Americans. He would have fought against the home team. That's what McCain did. Don't tell me about him being hung from the rafters in Vietnam anymore. That's a long time ago. I'm sorry it happened to him. It shouldn't have happened to him, but it did. But the fact of the matter is, this man inherited Barry Goldwater's conservative seat in Arizona, and he disgraced the name of Barry Goldwater. And also, I'm sorry to tell you, this is not easy for me to say, a northern white boy, an immigrant son at that, that McCain destroyed his family's name going back three generations because he came from a very distinguished military family. I would think that they're ashamed of what he did to them by taking the side of the foreign government called Mexico and the agribusiness or whoever it was who got to him. You know, the guy didn't even do it for money. He didn't do it out of corruption. He just did it because he's stupid, to be honest with you. That's my opinion. All right, let me take some callers. I need to hear a rock and roll song here. Put the air conditioning on in Area 54. I loved this song when I was a kid. Hard part of it I like. It's a great song. It's almost spiritual, and so it's so good. Probably, well, it's another story. It's not for you to hear. All right, Tarno, did you like my pantomime of Edwards? Did anyone enjoy that today in the audience? You came into the tent. It's thin. Late August, you know, I've told you my mental picture of the radio audience. It's a gigantic tent, humongous, like the Yankee Stadium with a tent top on it. And at any moment, there's like about a million people in this tent every quarter hour. I think that's the latest number, AQH, is about a million. So you figure it's not like a million people, the same million. They come in and out of the tent over the period of the show, the course of the show. Some sit, you can't pull them. They get white knuckles on the wooden chair. You can break their hands, they wouldn't get out of the chair. Others are outside the tent mocking me, saying, what are you going in there? That crackpot, I wouldn't go in there. But they're listening through the tent every day. You know, I'm not going to go in there. I don't like him. I like I'm a liberal. You know, I wouldn't go in that place. No, I'm not going to go in there. But every day they're outside, they're telling everyone why they shouldn't go in and listen to me. But they're listening to me through the tent. And again, strange this thing happened is eventually they realize that I'm right. And I remind them of the uncle that they hated because the uncle was right and they were wrong. They thought that by getting gelled hair and exercising, they would be cool and taking on global warming, liberalism, and the Prius, that they'd meet a pretty girl. But after the hair plugs and all, there's still a schmuck named Marty from Brooklyn who can't get a date. So at the end of the day, the hair plugs fell out. They put on 30 pounds, and they realized that their Uncle Morty was right. And they go in the tent, and they become a listener. It's not bad. I'm trying to tell you that there's a big audience out there. You're not alone. Portland, Oregon. Nikki on KXL. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael Savage. Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you.
Please. This is a family show.
In a state that is everything wrong with the United States, Oregon.
The United States of Oregon. You say you've seen what's wrong with Oregon, or?
I believe Oregon is everything that represents what is wrong with the whole United States and the way of thinking.
Is this a real voice? It sounds like Johnny Philip Morris.
Absolutely.
You're not related to Johnny Ribeiro, are you, the call for Philip Morris guy? Play that for a minute. Hold on. Stay on the phone. Play Johnny Philip Morris, call for Philip Morris. All right, now please, Nikki, please speak.
Okay. Well, I just want to.
I swear to God, I'm gonna collapse. You're like a descendant of Johnny Ribeiro, God rest his soul, the Philip Morris guy. Are you sure? Do you have a family name anywhere near Ribeiro?
No, I sure don't.
Okay, you're a good sport. Go on, please.
Well, I just wanted to let you know you have, and I know you're a modest guy, but you have absolutely just changed my life. I was introduced to you by a friend of my dad's, and I'm only 28, so I'm a young woman in your demographic. And, you know, it's just this whole illegal immigration thing and this culture war is making...
Is that what finally turned you? Let me ask you, do you have a ponytail?
I do have a ponytail in right now.
All right, because I'm sending you a Savage Nation hat, and you got to make me one promise. You'll take the ponytail and pull it through the back of the hat where the thing goes under, and you'll wear it. Will you wear it out in Portland, or are you afraid of the liberals?
You know, I would wear two of them if I could.
You can't wear it to work? They don't let you take it to the massage parlor?
Well, you know, believe it or not, I'm a social worker here in Oregon.
Wait a minute. Don't think I'm against. I started out as a social worker in New York. That's when I became, that's when I stopped being a little liberal, when I saw the grifters on the Upper West Side. You know, the apartments were all run down by that point, and they had all of the immigrants living in there from a certain island of Puerto Rico had inhabited it at that time. And many of them were on welfare, and I was a welfare worker. Because I spoke Spanish very well at that time, I understood what was going on, even though they thought I was a white boy and I didn't get it. But I remember one day I came in, you ring the bell, yeah, who is it? Welfare investigator. They didn't call it social worker. My day was welfare investigator. The whole object was to catch fraud. You understand? So I come in, and first of all, the woman was not supposed to be married because it was aid to the dependent, aid for women with dependent children or whatever, WIC, I don't know what. Meanwhile, I see a pair of shoes like a size 14 in the closet. So I said to her, whose shoes are those? She says, well, a painter was here, and he left them. All right. Now, in those days, you weren't allowed to have a telephone if you were on welfare. I'm talking to her, taking notes, and the bed starts to ring. I said, your bed is ringing. You ought to answer it. But I saw the racket from top to bottom, Nikki, and that's what started to wake me up as to what was going on in this country. Stay on the phone. I'm sending you a Savage Nation hat. That's all. Now play call for Philip Morris again. I want to hear that. Just for a sec. That's all. He killed my father. That's why I play. Not personally. No, he didn't have a vendetta and a fight in the Lower East Side. He was a midget, after all. Although my father was not a particularly big man, I'm sure he could have taken him, you know, a midget in his hand. But I'm not, I don't mean that. Because he, I don't still to this day understand the psychology of why would a midget in a bellhop's uniform have been used to sell cigarettes, number one. And what was the psychology that attracted that imagery to a male to smoke those cigarettes? Is there a psychologist in the house who could explain? What is it? If you smoke Philip Morris to that generation, you became shorter? Or if you smoke Philip Morris, you wouldn't be as short as Johnny Ribeiro? I don't understand it. I don't know how he made a buck. I can't figure out that psychology. I'm fairly good at figuring out what motivates people, but I can't look back and understand why. Every time this midget came out, this short guy came out, whatever, diminutive, whatever they called him, he was pretty good with the cruisers and the women, I heard, by the way, in his biography, God rest the soul. They said he was a first-class guy, made a lot of money as that in that act. And they spent it the right way. He boy, they said he liked cabin cruises and tall women. Well, that would be any woman. That's like saying George Bush has an approval rating of 32%. It's pretty high compared to Congress in that sense. Austin, Texas. Laura, you're on the Savage Nation.
I fell in love with you the moment I heard you. And this thing about the midget, I think men feel, well, much bigger or larger standing next to a midget.
Wait a minute. Hold on. So in other words, if the midget is saying, call for Philip Morris in those days, a man bought Philip Morris cigarettes to feel taller than the midget?
Oh, maybe not necessarily taller. Something else.
On a sexual level? More powerful than the midget?
Something like that.
So there was a sexual innuendo in Johnny Philip Morris's ads?
Unconsciously and the subconsciously, this was not, no one would want to admit it.
Well, look, let's take it on another level. We know that the Marlboro Man appealed to women, right? Because he was a sexy cowboy before Brokeback Mountain destroyed the cowboy image and turned them into a San Franciscans. Yeah. And we know the riding the Bronco and all of that. So, okay, if you smoked the Marlboro, it was the equivalent of getting a boyfriend who could ride a pony or something. And the women liked it. Mainly women smoked Marlboro in those days. But what in the world was the appeal of a midget? I don't understand the positive on it.
Anyone is bigger than a midget. Anyone is bigger than a midget. And probably the male organ, anybody's male organ would probably be bigger than the midget. But then again, I don't know anything about anatomy of a midget.
All right. No, this is a family show. We're adults. There's nothing crude in what you're saying. Now, you're calling me from Austin, Texas. And on my screen, it says Savage is her animus. Could you explain that?
I'll try. I fell in love with you probably within minutes after I heard you about 3 years ago. And I'm a rational person, and I just don't go around falling in love with people I don't know. And it has continued, and I listened to you just about.
But what is it? I remind you of somebody that you knew in a brief passing affair or what?
Okay, no. I have a degree in anthropology and psychology, like you, and you know, Young is not your favorite person, I understand. He sold out he sold out.
Yes, Jung sold out to the Nazis. Jung took Freud's chair. Jung was a first-class SOB and an evil man. Nevertheless, some of the Jungian analysis made sense to me, although I'm more interested in Adler than I am in either Jung or Freud. So do you practice psychology?
Oh, no. I'm a graduate student, and I kind of took a break because of all the lesbian politics in college, but I'm coming back.
Oh, boy, you got it real bad down in Austin. And Austin's as bad as San Francisco, isn't it, Lori?
Pretty bad. There's a lot of...
All right, stay on the line. Lori and I are going to continue our conversation. She says that she thinks I'm her animus. We're going to find out what that is. It is not a dirty word. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yeah.
Oh, little girl of mine.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday.
You sure look fine.
Roll from a time when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. All right, we got it. It's enough already. Imagine being a Hollywood starlet, a coke charge already for the fifth time, and they let her out of jail in an hour. Now, what would you do if you were a minority kid who got caught with a joint and put in jail for 30 days? What would you do if you were a minority kid, got caught with cocaine, you put away for 3 years? Would you think there's a two-tier justice system in America? It's disgusting. Lori, Austin, Texas, welcome back to the program.
Hi. The animus represents the masculine characteristics in a female, according to Jung. And then there's the anima, which represents...
Please, Lori, this is a family show.
I'm trying my best.
I'm joking. It's just that your southern accent could have been interpreted anima in another way. And I live in San Francisco, so it's a sensitive word.
Yeah. And my point is that... You're the male part of me because
this is bordering on play Misty for me. aren't you happily married? You have no boyfriend?
No, I'm not married.
But how did you avoid getting, if you're so intelligent, how did you avoid so far not finding somebody if you have a brain?
I have found somebody. I lost somebody through death, and then a divorce. So maybe it's just time I hang it up.
All right. Look, these things happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the thing, Lori. Remember, I'm a radio voice. You don't know who the person is. All you know is the voice. And the beauty of radio, Lori, and everyone else listening, and I said it on the show yesterday, is that radio is amazing because you can't see me. All you can do is imagine me. And therefore, you create a fiction attached to the voice. Do you understand the power of radio and the magic of radio?
Yes, it's very magical.
It's magical, and that's how it should remain. It's like here's the problem with real life and why I love radio so much. I'm always disappointed in real life on every level because real life is tough. But the imagination is unlimited in what it can conceive. It can scare you, but it can also give you great, hope as well because it's all imaginary. You follow me?
Yeah.
And so, therefore, sometimes certain things are best kept in the imagination.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
So,
oh, yeah.
I'm glad that you imagine that you like me.
No. I like you because, you know what? How can I not like you?
How can you not? Right. How can you not like the persona I project on the radio?
It's not a persona. It's more of a spiritual thing.
Well, as long as I'm not a persona non gratis in your mind, that's good enough for me. But this can become obsessive if you're not careful. And it sounds like it has already.
I do become obsessive, but I won't do that. No, I'm trying to keep it.
Do you have pictures of me all over the house, like with pins in it and all of that?
No,
I'm just testing. This is fun for me because I never did this. So, I mean, you don't have a whole wall with like Savage here, like everywhere from the internet, the different faces of Savage and like all sorts of like pictures around the room, nothing like that?
I create pictures with you on in the background. I paint, and every now and then when I need something special, and, sometimes, most of the time I listen to music, but every now and then I need some Savage. And
all right. Well, I'm glad that I fill that role. Well, Lori, you can certainly send your pictures to the guys, and I'll get them, and, I would enjoy that. I'm going to send you a free copy of my DVD. Have you got that already, the Freedom of Speech DVD?
Yeah.
Oh, you've seen the one of me with the speech and everything, talking by the water?
Oh, I would love to see that.
Oh, well, you're getting a free copy. Stay on the line, and thank you very much. Oh, okay, San Diego, Tom on the midget now. Tom, go ahead, please. Why does the midget work in the cigarette ad?
Well, to me, I think it's not the midget that the psychology is based on. It's the audience that he's talking to. I visualize sort of like him walking into a country club with these rich hoity-toity types, and he's serving them their cigarettes. And the psychology...
Well, the ad for Philip Morris in those days was, in fact, a man, a midget, who did come in, you're right, with a little tray in a club or a fancy hotel, and he would say, call for Philip Morris, like he was a man. So in other words, when a man reached for that cigarette, he thought he was being served by a midget in a hotel?
I'm a man, feel important or wealthy.
I see it. Yeah, well, of course. So poorer men who had no one working for them in that capacity felt that they could get over on Johnny, poor Johnny. Well, I don't know. I'm just, if this was an advertising class, we would analyze this. Is there an advertising student out there? Do they still look at ads from the old days that worked and why? I would love to look into that. Thank you, Tom, for that call. Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Donna, you're next up. Go ahead, please. 30 seconds or less.
Hi, Dr. Savage. You got me out of a ticket, and I want to thank you.
How?
I called you. I euthanized my dog May 19th. She was 16 years old last year.
You euthanized your dad May 16th?
My dad.
Your dad? I'm sorry. You see, again, it's a regional accent thing.
Sorry.
She said anima. I thought it was enema. You said dog. I thought you said dad. But thank God it was your dog, not your dad, and it was an anima, not an enema. Or I'd really be in trouble.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. There is a moon out tonight somewhere on the globe. I don't know if it's in your community, not in mine for sure. I don't like the song Kill It. There's nothing in it. I don't feel a thing for this. I need something to get me going. You'll have to. If I don't like rock and roll, I'm going to shift to Rammstein. If I don't like Rammstein, I'm going to shift to, I know what. I know what I want. After the show last night in my hidden location, a distant neighbor was playing opera very, very, very loudly in a very large estate. And I made a Dr. Savage, a large Dr. Savage, which consists of one-third vodka, one-third fresh orange juice, and one-third club soda. And I took the Doc Savage with me over to the far end of the lawn over by a lemon tree. And I listened to the opera, and I became so inspired by the opera and the tragedy and the comedy and the fabulousness of the voices. It was probably Pavarotti. I don't know exactly who it was. Certainly one of the contemporary opera stars, that I began singing La Donna Mobile in an archway. And, of course, the resonance was fabulous. And my dog, Teddy, probably didn't respond that well because he probably heard me, you know, goof around a little before. So it was nothing new to him. But a dog at the place I was visiting sat there looking up at me like RCA Victor, like his master's voice. It was so cute to see this cockapoo looking up at me with, like, big Dumbo bozo face on, like, wow, man, you're great. How do you do that? Man, I like that. And then he like trailed me around wanting me to like sing opera for him again. So not being the type that would want to fail a dog. I mean, in this case, three dogs. It was Teddy and his companion, Tasha, and then the friend there, the cock of I made another Dr. Savage, and it was one-third vodka, one-third orange juice, one-third club soda. Put in a piece of fresh lemon from the garden. Stir and cock that elbow up to the heavens. And then I sang a little bit more. And I was singing this aria. Play it now. I won't do it on the show. Don't get embarrassed for me. The libs are dying for me to make a schmuck of myself. I'm not doing it. You don't have to be, you know. See, okay, turn it off. Now, I'm not going to get into this. It's not my job to tell you what to like or not. What I'm getting at is you can listen to Rammstein. You can listen to Latin music. You can listen to opera. You can listen to it all because there are all of these things and elements within you. Don't you understand that? That's what I'm trying to get at you. And this is why we control the next election. The reason my audience will control the outcome of the next election is because I actually resonate with the largest population, the largest under-listened-to population in America is my audience. Notice that nobody will come on this radio show who thinks they could be president. They'll go on shows where they get softball questions and they figure it's safer, but they're not getting anywhere. They're not gaining traction. You're the audience that stopped illegal immigration. You're the audience that stopped the Dubai ports deal. You're the audience that stopped the appointment of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court. I can give you four or five things you did. Now, what they don't understand is they have to come before you in order to win this election. And some of them will get it very, very close to the election when they realize that their tires are spinning in mud. They're going nowhere. And the reason is because they haven't touched you yet. How can they reach you if they don't come through the show? They can't. So they can continue to go on Larry King, and they can go on The Golfer, they can go on Wallbang, it doesn't matter. This audience sure, there's an overlap with very unique. And unless they come before this audience and they let me ask them questions, they're not going to get your vote. And I mean, I don't know what they're afraid of. How hard is it to figure out what I'd ask them? What are you going to do to stop illegal immigration? Now, why can't Giuliani come on the show and answer that question? What are you going to do on homosexual marriage? How are you going to protect the traditional family, Mr. Giuliani? How hard is that to answer? You don't have to do the Waldorf Astoria bob and weave to answer that. Tell us what you're going to do to stop this the downward slide of America's morality. And how are you going to defend family values? You can say, oh, well, what do you mean by family values? You remember how they co-opted that? The left said, well, a family is something different in America today. A family is no longer mom, pa, kettle. A family can be two men. It could be two women. It could be a dog and a hydrant. So they debased family. They stole the word family. They steal the word marriage. But not on this show. You don't steal those words from my audience. And they're waiting for someone to come on this show and answer those questions. And someone will. Mind you, at the end of the day, mark my words. I won't even have to look for them. They're going to look for me. And they're going to come on this show to gain your support. And so now it comes back to what I was talking about, opera, Rammstein, rock and roll, blah, blah, blah. Because your mind is active. Because your mind is active, you're listening to what people actually say, and you want the truth, and you don't hear it from any of the politicians. You understand that? Now, before I take this first caller or whatever, the woman who got out of a ticket, I owe it to her. Donna in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, I'm sorry, let's go back to you. I didn't mean any joke about your deceased father. How did you get out of the ticket?
I got out of ticket. God bless you. I'm 50 years old, so I was 49 years old last year. I got the first ticket of my life. I had just hung up with you. I had to euthanize my 16-year-old mixed-breed dog, and you comforted me. But I'm a nurse, and I smoke, and I was nervous. So I drove in a small town. It's Old Forge, and I kind of slid through a stop sign. I didn't exactly stop.
Right.
And I was sobbing and I was crying. And the two officers came up to me. One was a man and one was a woman. And I'm sobbing, crying. I had just hung up with you maybe 15 minutes before. And they were writing me up. They told me that I went to a stop sign. I didn't stop completely. And I said, I am so sorry. And the girl said to me, of course, a woman is more, you know, they have more feelings, I think, than a man. She said to me, what is wrong with you? And I said, I just euthanized my dog. I said, I have her here, and I had her cremated, and I had her ashes, and I took her for her last ride. And I said, I just got it. She said, are you the Donna that just got off the phone with Dr. Savage? And I said, yes. She said, God, we were crying when we heard the story.
Oh, my God. I don't believe this. So the officers were listening to you on the radio crying about euthanizing your dog. Then they stop you, and there you are?
Approximately 15 to 20 minutes later. And they had just heard me crying to you about euthanizing my 16-year-old dog. And I got out of the ticket. I thank you for that. I thank you for the education. I pray for you daily. I wish I could get through every day. There's so many things. But if you would give me a minute, would you like to hear the obituary I put in for my dog?
Yes, 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 yes. Go ahead.
I love it because you're a dog lover. God summoned a beast from the field, and he said, behold, man, created in my image. Therefore, adore him. You shall protect him in the wilderness, shepherd his flocks, watch over his children, accompany him wherever he may go, even unto civilization. You shall be his companion, his ally, his slave. To do these things, God said, I endow you with these instincts uncommon to other beasts, faithfulness, devotion, and understanding, surpassing those of man himself.
Hold on right there. This is interesting. Do you really think that a dog can surpass, he certainly can surpass man with faithfulness and devotion. That's a given.
Right.
Do you really think dogs have an understanding greater than man?
Yeah.
Because I had somebody say that to me. Because I asked, how does my dog Teddy understand the following? And they said to me, because dogs can understand in a dimension we can't even understand in. Do you believe that?
I believe it. I would cry if I was upset. And my dog would run in the room and lick my tears. She was a faithful. May I continue?
Did you get another dog? Look, the best cure here is to get back on that horse. Did you get another dog yet?
6.6-pound Chihuahua.
Well, wait a minute. What kind of dog did you euthanize, did you say?
Breed a large, like a collie shepherd.
And now you went to a small dog?
Well, they were putting her to sleep. She was abused. I took her in.
Now you have real trouble on your hands because they're going to be trouble all your life now. Some of these abused dogs, you know, I don't want to get into it. They're very hard to take care of. I know a lot of people have sympathy for them. Anyway, Donna, that is a very touching story. I'm glad I got you out of a ticket, and God bless you. I can't believe that story. But I've told you that a nation can be judged by how it treats its animals. I've told you that. America has a soft spot for animals. Does it make us a bunch of schmucks and idiots? No. I think it makes us great people. The way we treat our pets tells us that we're the best people on the planet. The Chinese eat them. The Koreans eat them. I'm sorry. You don't want to hear it? You're going to hear it. They beat them to death in the countryside in China while they're living in a cage because they say the meat tastes better. So this is what you can expect in the future if we continue to be patsies and roll over to all of our enemies. They'll wind up beating you in a cage and cooking you, as far as I'm concerned. And, then when you see this thing with Vic, the way he treated dogs, you don't know which way to turn anymore. How do you get a woman on one hand like Donna and a guy like Vic on the other that uses dogs as meat and fodder for dog, it's just the human condition is amazing to me. But that's the story of people. You don't know who the person is, really, until you get to know who that person is, really. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Any topic is fair game. When I return, please go on to michaelsavage.com, pick a story and call me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Dr. Savage has the best stethoscope in the business. I have my stethoscope on the heartbeat of America. I really do. Which is probably why the candidates won't come on the show. I mean, they want to go on Larry King and this and that and pull the malarkey. And they're probably happy to do that, figuring that the rationale is, so they won't get all of the voters, but they'll get enough to win if they stay away from the truth. Then they'll do what they are told to do anyway, because they're marionettes. They're not going to do what the reason they can't do what they promise you is they have no power. I don't know whether you've recognized this for a while now, but the president is fundamentally a figurehead to a large extent, very much like the Queen of England is a figurehead. Where is the real power? Where does the real power of America reside? I'll let you figure that one out. I don't think it's in the marionettes that come out every 4 years. You know? Dayton, Ohio. Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, what can I do nutritionally to treat my chronic psoriasis?
All right. First, the caveat. It is open mic to Mike Friday, so I have to take any caller that gets on. Secondly, I cannot give you medical advice on the radio. However, I can advise some ideas that you should investigate. Is that fair enough?
Oh, sounds good.
All right. It's a collagen disease. How bad is it?
Up to 70% of my body at times.
Oh, my God. Have you had a nutritional physician look at your copper levels?
No, sir.
Okay. The first thing you should do you have any arthritic changes?
No, sir.
Okay, that's good. But you have lesions at your elbows, your knees, your belt buckle, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on my head. Pretty much anywhere. Nails.
Have you tried sunlight exposure?
Yeah, and I did not respond to it at all.
Did not respond to it at all. All right. Are you on any medication? Are you on methotrexate?
I took methotrexate and had limited success. Some of the biologics, I'm on something called Humira right now, and I'm getting pretty good results from it.
All right. Well, let me just say that when I was a nutritional doctor and I was involved in the orthomolecular movement a number of decades ago, I remember reading about psoriasis. And at that time, excess copper and deficient zinc and sulfur were considered to be one metabolic factor. And they found that psoriasis patients probably required more than the usual amount of zinc to restore their serum levels to a normal of 100 micrograms per cent. And I would recommend that you look into this. Psoriasis is a very serious disorder. It's not treatable by over-the-counter drugs. And, it'll respond to glucocorticoids, but the side effects of the steroids relegate steroids to a kind of last resort, and I wouldn't recommend them. There were studies that did find that zinc was markedly decreased in the outer layers of the skin of patients with psoriasis, going back, if I remember correctly, to 1956, done by Braun and Falco. That was confirmed in 1966 by, if I remember correctly, Panareva, who found high levels of zinc in the scales of people with psoriasis. I mean, I have a fairly good memory on this, on recall on this. And again, I'm not diagnosing nor treating, but I would recommend that you get a nutritional physician that's a medical doctor who practices nutritional medicine in your community and ask him to look into serum copper levels and serum zinc levels, because many experts in that field suspected that excess copper and deficient zinc was one metabolic factor, and they then recommended 220 milligrams of zinc sulfate morning and night, and enough B6 to produce normal dream recall. And I'm going to pause at that, Eric. I hope it's of some value. Again, I don't want to turn this into a health show, but I don't want to diminish the power of nutrients in medicine, which have been overlooked and diminished in our generation. They were very, very big in the 70s and 80s. And then the medical pharmaceutical establishment unified and started to put out false studies showing that vitamins were not only not helpful but harmful, with distorted fake studies with corrupt doctors. And they've come up with all sorts of theories as to why you shouldn't use vitamins, all of which are false. And the problem is that many of you don't know which vitamins to use and how. Truthfully, I mean, that's the way I see it. So, want me to do a pitch? I'll do a pitch. Buy Healing Children Naturally. It's all about vitamins, nutrition, and diet as a first line against certain problems. I'm not saying throw away all of modern medicine by any means, but for God's sakes, don't throw away 1,000 years of knowledge in the form of which foods to eat and not to eat with various illnesses. The Chinese have practiced this for ages. And in that book, I culled the best information for children because I think that they were the most vulnerable of communities and also the most abused. Take a look at what they're doing to our children with Ritalin today, which is a disaster. It's child abuse to put a child on Ritalin. Reading Healing Children Naturally. And if you're not a child and you want to protect your brain, your healthy brain, yes, go read Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's because it's all about nutrition. Go laugh at me if you want. I don't really care if you laugh. Laugh at your own expense. You'll wind up in a dementia ward, not me, I can guarantee it. All you liberals, that's where you belong right now.
Savage.
Yeah.
little darling. Oh, 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 do I love
Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Back from Area 51. Open mic to Mike.
Are you? I love
her. Here's a story. Turn it off now. They can't listen. This one just came in from Providence, Rhode Island. I can't believe this headline. Man dies after surgeon operates on wrong side of head. Oh, my God. An 86-year-old man has died 3 weeks after a surgeon operated on the wrong side of his head. And state health authorities were investigating whether the mistake contributed to his death. The man underwent emergency surgery at Rhode Island Hospital on July 30th to treat bleeding in his brain. But a nurse practitioner for Dr. Frederick Harrington didn't record which side of the man's brain required surgery. When another nurse pointed out the missing info, Harrington allegedly relied on his memory without consulting a CT chart and began operating on the wrong side of the man's head. Upon realizing the error during the surgery, the surgeon operated on the correct side. This would be like going in for a hemorrhoid operation and the guy cuts off your private part. And he says, well, wait a minute, that's not what he came in for. Oh, okay, well, we'll sew it back on and we'll go back to the hemorrhoid. This is any wonder people have lost faith in everything anymore? My God, what a world. Harrington also operated on the wrong side of a patient's head during... What? Wait a minute. I'm not making any of this up. The incident marked the third wrong side surgery error in the hospital's neurosurgery unit in 6 years. You talk about it, well, it's not brain surgery. Health officials have ordered the hospital to hire a consultant to review its surgical safety procedures. Harrington also operated on the wrong side of a patient's head during a surgery at Roger Williams Medical Center in September. After reviewing that incident, the State Board of Medical Licensure and Discipline decided there were mitigating circumstances and opted to create a remediation plan for Harrington rather than publicly sanction him. This is unbelievable. This is crazy. This is crazy. I mean, that's amazing, the number of chances they've given this guy. How many wrong head operations can he give till they finally throw him out of the hospital? Let's see what chance you take. Let us show Mother Teresa did not feel the presence of Jesus in the last half of her life. I read that yesterday. It was a pretty good show. I don't want to go into it again. It was poor woman suffered, you know. WOR, New York City. Ann, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. I just want to say that you're kind of a puzzle to me because I'm very drawn to everything that you say, illegal immigration, the homosexual thing, liberalism. I mean, I'm always, like, right with you when you're talking, but I don't like your attitudes towards women. I just have to preface it with something. The other day I went out, I bought two of your books to support you with the San Francisco thing, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand you when it comes to regarding women. So,
let's deal with it. What do you mean the way my attitudes towards women? Tell me what you don't like. What don't you like?
A woman has a right on this earth. If she decides she doesn't want to have a family as she goes through life, like let's say she just wants to pursue a profession or something like that, that's her God-given right. She's not a cow.
All right, but wait a minute. When did you hear me say she doesn't have that right?
I didn't hear you say that she didn't have the right, but I get the feeling from you that women should be, like, pigeonholed. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
Not really. I don't think that a family is for everyone, nor do I think that a child should be born of every woman. I mean, some women are not made to raise children. They just don't want them. They're too selfish, too driven, or whatever. It's their business. They're not here as broodmares.
Yeah, that's exactly, that's kind of the impression I get, like, when I listen to you, that you kind of feel like, unless it's the family, it's nothing, you know?
Well, okay, like, that's not to say that I don't think the family is the brick of civilization. It is.
Yes,
and it's not saying that every woman has the obligation or responsibility to have a baby. I didn't say that either, you see? You know, you don't have to have one or the other. You can have both together. You could still support the traditional family and not say every woman must have a child. Although I absolutely agree that we need to do what the Russians are starting to do, which is reward families with tax incentives, and we have to do it real fast. And I mean only citizen families, not illegal alien families, need to be rewarded through tax incentives. And let the gays scream all they want, I really don't care. Because if we don't gain control of the family unit, we're finished as a civilization. What else don't you like, and what else do you like?
I like everything that you say, really. That's the only thing, because I live my life that way. Like I said, I'm 62, I'm a registered nurse, I own my own home free and clear, and I tell...
So what's wrong with that? So you're an independent person who's very self-contained. I would be very proud of myself if I were you.
You?
I guess you get a sense that in order to have a to be in accordance with my value system, you think that I would look down upon you, that you don't have a family, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, I'm not. I never said that in a million years.
I'm so glad to hear that, really.
Yeah, well, now you feel better, I'll bet, forever.
Yep, I should do, Michael.
Well, there's another element to this. I think what you're saying is that I better be careful before I go along with this whole right-wing family value conservative thing, because they're liable to not really like me because I'm not a family woman. That's underlying it all, isn't it?
I think it's just that, you know, in the old...
Did you start out somewhat liberal, Anne?
All I know is that when I was a kid, that the sexual revolution appealed to my heart, but I think that the sexual revolution got off on the wrong foot, like this business with the Hollywood slutso and all that.
Where it's led to. Okay, yeah, well, let's talk about the arc. Let's start in the 60s. Let it all hang out, man. Why not do it in the road? If it feels good, do it. Now we've reached a point where degenerate Holly sluts are the role model for America. I mean, that certainly isn't what we want for a nation, is it?
No, it isn't. But I was for economic and intellectual independence. I was not for just sexual.
Yeah, I hear you. Right, just for sexuality. That was part, and I'm going to tell you where that came from. The total sexual liberation part of it came from the communist movement. I know it's very hard for people to understand this, but free love, so-called, was one of the chief recruiting techniques of the communist movement in the 1920s during the labor movements. They'd go into work halls, and the communist women would have sex with the men in order to get them to sign up for the Communist Party USA. I've studied this from the beginning right until now. And this entire arc of sex, 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 sex is all part of this psychology to break down the traditional values of society, break down the family, break down the church, and let it be reformed. In the government controlled way, the new way, the new world order way.
I think, like I said,
it gets too esoteric. You know, I came up with a new word because of you, Holly slut. I like that. I'm gonna have to write it down. Right. Everyone's searching for the right. Well, it's nauseating. These girls, they're the ultimate in white trash. You've got to admit that, don't you agree, Anne?
I agree with you absolutely.
I mean, who finds them attractive? Why are they in the news day in and day out? Why do we have to look at these vermin day in and day out? They're the lowest level of womanhood the world has ever seen. They're beneath prostitution. A prostitute performs a service for a fee. These girls perform nothing for a fee other than disgracing womanhood itself.
I think it's terrible because women are capable of so much more.
Yes, and don't you think that the media moguls who continuously show them and capitalize on them are in essence debasing women more than any man and any man's machismo has ever done? Don't you think it's the media barons who are really debasing womanhood with this constant harping on the sexuality and this imagery of these Holly sluts?
Right, I do. Yep.
All right. What kind of medicine as a nurse do you practice?
I have practiced as a psychiatric nurse. Right now I'm working in a nursing home getting ready to retire.
Have you ever seen a doctor, like I read about, who performed surgery on the wrong side of the head?
Yeah, I got a kick
out of that. And then said, wait, then he says whoops in the middle and then goes to the right side of the head? I never heard of anything like this.
Yeah, he's lucky he didn't cut his head off.
Right, he could have said he came in for a headectomy, and then say, well, let me sew it back on. I didn't realize it was not this guy. I thought it was a snake. At least you're laughing, Ann. Thank you very much for calling. Let me send. She bought the books. I don't know what to send her. What do you want, Ann? Can I send you a hat? A Savage Nation hat? Yes?
The Buddhist didn't have The Enemy Within.
All right. Okay. Ann's getting a free copy of The Enemy Within. 1-800-449-8255. Play Call for Philip Morris again because I have a caller on it. I want people to get up to speed for a minute. Then I'll explain it. Then we'll take the psychologist from L.A. Go ahead. All right, it's enough. They got it. So it was a midget portrayed. A midget walked around with a tray, and he went into a hotel, and he said, call for Philip Morris. And somehow that was appealing to men of my father's generation, God rest his soul. He smoked Philip Morris two packs a day, and it killed him. I'm sure it did. Kelly, Los Angeles, you're a psychologist. What's the appeal of this midget, Ed? I'd like to know. Go ahead, please.
The midget is symbolic of a child's innocence. Like, you can't have a child smoking cigarettes because it wouldn't be, you know, appropriate. So next best thing is a midget, especially somebody with a high voice. So it's very symbolic of a little kid. And then I think that...
But wait, let me follow you because, Kelly, I really don't understand that. Honest to God, this is not even a joke. So why would a grown man be attracted to a product that is promoted by a kid?
It's not. It's that the little person, the high voice, makes it seem like it's not bad for you to smoke.
Interesting.
And then you identify. See, the thing is that you were a little boy, so you identify with. See, you got this little kid. You got this little midget with the high voice, with the platter, giving old people, you know, giving men cigarettes, and so it looks very innocent. And how could it be wrong? And then you also gave your father cigarettes for a present, so you identify with the little midget. The little boy in you is like the little midget, see? So then that's
it's interesting. You mean, in other words, I bought him cartons of cigarettes because the midget made it okay to do so?
Yeah, well, like, so you're in cahoots with the midget.
You're right. No, I feel guilty to this day. I say, Mom, what should I get Dad for his birthday? She says, I don't know, get him two cartons of cigarettes. In those days, that's what I did. Little did I know, I was adding to the fuel to the fire.
You're trying to be a good son. What the hell?
I didn't know any better. How did I know they were going to knock him off with the cigarettes? Kelly, you're a charming guy. You practice psychology anymore in L.A.?
Yeah, I work with the Department of Corrections, so I work with some real winners, you know?
Oh, my goodness. You know, one of these days I really like to speak with someone who sees the real darkest of the dark in human nature, because I don't think the American people can really take how violent the human being is capable of becoming. You must see all of that, huh?
Yeah, I do. And I got to tell you, you know, it's right back to the old drug thing. You know, 90% of it's methamphetamine. And I also work with a lot of chronically mentally ill. And I'll tell you what, it's amazing how many people, before I worked with the Department of Corrections, I just worked at private psych hospitals. And it was amazing how many people I saw were borderline schizophrenic. They wouldn't have been schizophrenic. They probably wouldn't be the sharpest tool in the shed, but they wouldn't be schizo. But because they got addicted to smoking weed, they became schizos. And,
yes. Oh, marijuana tips them over the edge every time. It's a very dangerous drug. I mean, every study that's coming out now is proving it. And people still walk around, you know, in movies, everyone smokes a joint like it's benign. It's amazing to me, the brainwashing.
It is. It sure is. Well, thank you, Dr. Savage. I appreciate you. I listen to you every day, and keep up the good work.
Well, let me send you a free copy of the DVD, the Freedom of Speech Award, Kelly. I'd like you to have that to counter some of the darkness that you see, because I do try to bring light. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about Holly Sluts and other things on the Savage Nation. Be here. Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We have the carousel music again from yesterday. For those of you who are listening to me as I broadcast from Area 51, KNEW, San Francisco. Nigel, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Yes, Dr. Savage, I just want to applaud your use of metaphors, and I feel that today the art of conversation is lost, and sometimes you have to be, you know, you have to have an affinity for metaphors just to explain things to certain people, and that's what I like about your show. You're able,
Well, remember yesterday's show where I used the metaphor of the carousel, and I said some kids sit on the stationary horse. Some get on the horse that moves up and down, and then the kid. And some people go through their entire life crying with the mother having to hold them on that stationary horse, others shoot horse. I was joking around, but the carousel is a good metaphor.
See, I believe that President Bush's would be a donkey, a very stubborn one, if he's facing the wrong way.
But would it go up and down, or would it be stationary?
In fact, it'd be broken, and it would probably have three other horses holding it up and telling it what to do.
Okay, so having said that, what would the metaphor be for Hillary Clinton?
I'm thinking a bull. You know,
in the political zoo, I call her something other than a bull. I call her something else. I think a leopard of some kind.
I feel that. Also, I want to ask you a question.
Wait, in the political zoo, Hillary Clinton is named the limber leopard, Peronista manipulatus. As the queen of her species, this thick-legged predator is known for her domination of the pack, and her one advantage is being able to change her spots at will. I think that was pretty good. Do you know that in the political zoo, my friend, I called Hugo Chavez the oily, armored toad, thick-headed Leninista? Extremely poisonous, the Chavez resembles a toad, but his armor is thicker. And rather than swimming in water, he prefers to wallow in oil, which explains his greasy appearance and his ability to slip out of tight situations. It's good. It's as good as Jonathan Swift. But go tell that to the average person. You know, the man said he likes metaphors. That's great. But you have to have an intelligent, an educational level of a certain level to understand a metaphor, number one. Now let's go to the level of satire. I use satire and I say, let them starve to death if they want to, not eat. And I say it's satire, and they don't even know what the word satire means. So the communists steam them up, and they go and they march against me, all those communist front groups. But I'll tell you, 1681, John Dryden, great English writer, wrote the following. He wrote that the true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction. And he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease. So I provided a harsh remedy to the disease of illegal immigration. And they didn't understand satire because they don't have the education level, and they were manipulated by those who do have the education level but chose not to see the satire. And that's all I'm going to say on that point. Here's a very good story for us. It's getting good every day. Things are getting better. Get that song ready. Colonel wants a Deetha murder case dropped. San Diego. An investigating officer recommended Thursday dismissing all charges against the Marine accused of murdering two girls in an assault that killed 24 civilians in the Iraqi town of Aditha. Lance Corporal Stephen Tatum, 26, was charged with unpremeditated murder of two girls and negligent homicide and suspicion of the unlawfully killed two men and women, blah, blah, blah. So the investigating officer, Lieutenant Colonel Paul Ware, said the evidence was too weak for a court-martial. He said Tatum did shoot and kill civilians, but, quote, he did so because of his training and the circumstances he was placed in not to exact revenge and commit murder. You see the difference here? Go tell that to Time Magazine and Newsweek. Now, listen to what the lieutenant colonel, who knows what combat is, says. He says, I believe Lance Corporal Tatum's real-life experience and training on how to clear a room took over, and his body instinctively began firing while his head tried to grasp at what and why he was firing, the colonel wrote. By the time he could recognize that he was shooting at children, his body had already acted. Ware's recommendation is non-binding. Lieutenant General James Mattis, the commanding general overseeing the case, has final say about whether Tatum will be court-martialed. And I pray that Mattis, who is known as the Patton of the U.S. Marines, a real good man, they love him, General Mattis will do the right thing, and eventually our particular guy, Lieutenant Colonel Chassani, will be exonerated. But that's when our fun begins, because the day that this entire case is dismissed against all of the men, which it will be and should be because they committed no crime, we must not permit the prosecutor to have gotten away with this and say, oh, well, it was just a law case to me. And we must not let Tim McGurk of Time Magazine get away with what he did. They must track down Tim McGurk. They must start a congressional investigation of this Time Magazine reporter. They must try to see if, in fact, he did do this in an attempt to harm the Marine Corps, because he has a history, by my understanding, of attacking the military, a long history of being a leftist, a far leftist, an extremist. He took the word of the enemy after a firefight, shops it around, takes it to Murtha. Murtha takes it to the Marines, and they put these men through hell. This case will not be over until Murtha, McGurk, and the prosecutor are themselves on trial, in my opinion. But that's in the hands of someone else, not me. I have no power whatsoever. I am simply one man with an opinion in an undershirt here on the Savage Nation. Well, we're coming to the end of this particular hour. I'm giving you positive news. This is going to be a huge victory for us. I gave $25,000 of my own funds to the defense through the Moore Center. You gave over $300,000 by now. Don't think this didn't help. It's because they had the money to hire a good attorney who could defend these poor men in the proper manner that were getting justice. But think of how many poor boys in the military have had no justice and have had no peace because of the left-wing vermin in the media and the left-wing vermin in the military itself who will do anything to advance their own careers. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now, since I've done almost no politics so far, now I'm going to turn to politics in this hour in the Savage Nation, and I'm going to make some predictions. Here's a story that you're not going to believe. We know that we have a certifiable lunatic running Venezuela. He's a socialist dictator. I would say his role model is more like Benito Mussolini than anyone else that I can more or less figure out in the immediate past. Not Hitler, certainly. There are no concentration camps or death camps. I would say more like the buffoon Mussolini, but just as dangerous as Mussolini, and let's hope he'll come to the same end as Mussolini. Now this lunatic, Hugo Chavez, who has changed the name of his country, redesigned the flag of Venezuela, changed the coat of arms in order to make it a socialist state, now this left-wing psychopath is going to move the country's time zone by 30 minutes in order to offer a more equitable distribution of sunlight. In September, you see, Venezuela will turn clocks back by 30 minutes in order to boost the amount of natural light to residents. So the man is trying in his own mind to become an Aztec god. See, he gives light, and therefore God said, there shall be light. So Chavez, you look at the man and you could see he's crazy. Now, all leaders are megalomaniacs to a certain extent. In order to become a leader, they have to be. However, some need to be constrained in order to prevent them from becoming madmen. And since that system of government does not prevent a madman from gaining absolute power anymore, because thanks to Jimmy Carter, the Constitution has been thrown out the window. Jimmy Carter did this as well. Jimmy Carter is perhaps the most dangerous man in American history, but that's a separate story. He now wants a more fair distribution of the sunrise, and Chavez is ordering clocks changed by 30 minutes. Now, having said that, I'm going to make another statement. We all know, if we follow the news, that Fidel Castro is hanging by a thread if he's not already dead. My suspicion is that he's dead or will be over the weekend or in the very near future. He's very frail and very old, and the communist dictator will die. I believe at that point there will be a major move in this hemisphere by perhaps Chavez, I can't really tell, to gain control of Cuba and maintain its socialist state, because there's a tremendous pent-up desire to see Cuba become free of the yoke of the psychopath Fidel Castro. And there is a populist uprising that's more than likely to arise in Cuba once Castro is dead. His brother doesn't have the charisma nor the following that Fidel had. I believe that we could see Chavez the lunatic try to maintain his sphere of influence, to increase his sphere of influence into the homeland of Cuba, where he derives all of his ideas from. At that point, the United States is going to have to act. And I hope we're not drawn out too far and too thin to protect our own flanks from the psychopath Chavez. Because if we don't stop him in Cuba, if we don't stop this man in Cuba, we're going to have to stop him somewhere else. Now, I understand how unpopular this would be amongst the leftist drivel in this country in particular. The leftists who drivel in particular, they'll drivel even more. It doesn't matter. We are a sovereign nation. We have a great military. The problem is that we don't have the leadership to use the military in a proper fashion in order to, A, win in Iraq, B, in Afghanistan, and get the heck out of there, and, of course, to beat back this maniac before he destabilizes and produces more communism, ranging from Mexico down to south, all the way through the tip of Tierra del Fuego. If you care to discuss any of these topics, call Henry Kissinger, not me. Sacramento, Nicholas, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I just wanted to call and let you know that, you know, I don't always agree with you, but I know I had to do the right thing by going out and purchasing your Freedom of Speech DVD. And I also wanted to donate a day's worth of pay. You know, I'm a blue-collar worker. I only make $11.50 an hour, and I would like to donate that either to the Paul Revere or for...
Oh, no. Please don't, Nicholas. That's so kind of you. I know what you're saying. You're saying you don't have to agree with me to agree with Freedom of Speech. I'm gonna do something for you. I'm gonna send you a free Savage Nation cap. Please don't send any money to me. If people want to buy items, that's fine, but don't send any money. I won't accept it. Nicholas, you're a good man, because even though you don't agree with me, you understand that that's exactly why you have to support me, particularly because you don't agree with me. You understand what freedom is, because tomorrow it could be you who has the unpopular speech.
I totally agree with you, Savage. I want to just thank you for being there for the people and for the voice. You know, I'm the only one in the neighborhood who ever talks about you, who knows about you, and I'm going to keep letting my fellow peers know in the neighborhood that, you know what I mean, just do the right thing and hopefully turn your station on so we can learn something. I don't go to school, so I got to, you know what I mean, take my free class.
That's right. You got to take your learning wherever you can find it. That's correct, and then judge for yourself. If you have an inquisitive mind, you will be a very, very learned man eventually. It doesn't matter how far you go in school. All that matters is that you keep your mind open and you keep listening and then thinking, 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 thinking. The thinking process itself is a learning process, Nicholas. It also is the greatest of all exercises, and the brain is the least used organ of the body for most Americans today.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I learned a lot from...
Stay on the line. We're going to send you a free copy of any of the books. You want to send Nicholas to Political Zoo. He'll get a kick out of that because he'll find words in there that he doesn't know and he'll look them up. This is a whole learning experience. That's a great, great call, truthfully, because there's a man who's emerging and developing. And thank God there are still people who are trying to think. Nicholas of Sacramento doesn't agree with me, but he bought the DVD in order to support me, and that's wonderful. What do you want to talk about? Venezuela? Yeah, John San Diego, go ahead. You were in Venezuela last week. Go ahead. What did you see?
Well, last time I was in Caracas about a week ago, I was going down the road to the airport, which is about a 45-minute ride, and there was a picture of Uncle Sam painted on a wall. There was some leftist propaganda there that said every day 30,000 kids die from capitalism, and then it basically showed Uncle Sam in a suicide bomber vest, and, you know, where each stick of dynamite would go. It said, you know, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, George Bush, the whole lot. I mean, the place has really just gone, you know, just really gone down the toilet.
I believe this country has to go to war with Venezuela sooner rather than later. That's my opinion. The man is in cahoots with Iran, the enemy of all free people on the earth. He is trying to gain nuclear weapons. He's trying to buy submarines. What are we waiting for? We need world opinion on our side. A, we're never going to have world opinion. B, the world opinion could be damned as far as I'm concerned. And C, we have every obligation to defend ourselves from this psychopath. Venezuela was once a great free nation. This psycho stole the freedom of the people and is now stealing their land. And this man has to be stopped before long. I hope to God the government is not too weak in this country to do the right thing and to stop him before he gains more power. Thank you for the call. It's as clear as a bell. And by the way, once they do... And by the way, if this government should eventually stop this crazy man and gain control to the records in Venezuela, they're going to find linkages all the way back to sanctuary cities in this country and certain supervisors in San Francisco who passed proclamations saluting Hugo Chavez. And when that day comes, I hope they take these supervisors out in orange jumpsuits and they give them the perp walk, which they deserve. Every one of them who voted against me should be taken out in handcuffs and arrested for collusion with a communist. That's my dream. You see, I have dreams, too. I told you I have a great imagination. KNEW, San Francisco, Lance, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I think I'm going to take this opportunity to digress and say I'm very happy with that call from Nicholas. There's nothing quite like a thirsty mind. That was fantastic.
Well, I was a former teacher, and I know the difference between intelligence and the rigid doctrinaire thinking. This young man hasn't had the opportunity to go to school. He had a lot of bad breaks in his life, but he's very intelligent. He deserves the break.
Thirsty mind is a wonderful thing. And the other day you apologized for digressing during the course of some subject. I can't recall what it was, but I think that your digressions really make your entertainment, and you should never apologize for a quality digression.
How would you like to, how could I digress for you today?
Well, we could go to the presidential candidates for a minute, and my idea about why they, very few of them, will rise to the challenge of appearing on your show. It's because they really don't want to reach the voters in the Savage Tent. I believe that you will make those candidates appear to be silly, ignorant, or disingenuous, and appearing with you, being interviewed by you, will not make their candidacy. It will.
Well, wait a minute. If I have 15 million, 20 million people who are potential voters, I certainly don't control what people are going to do. but I could certainly control or influence a certain number of millions of them. And since each election is usually won by a razor-thin margin, and they're pandering to virtually every pressure group in this country, lesbians for justice, homosexuals for inkwells, oil men for donuts, they'll go to any group, no matter how small, to win a vote, but they won't come to an audience that is this large? Does that make sense to you?
Well, what I'm saying is that I don't believe that they will win a vote by coming to you.
So you mean even the independent voter who's out there and saying, I'm undecided, the minute they hear Giuliani on here doing the Waldorf Astoria two-step on various social issues, they'll if they were thinking of voting him, they won't vote for him?
Next to fill-in-the-blank candidate. You'll make them appear to be silly, ignorant, or
I wouldn't intend to. I would ask a few straight questions. I'd even give them the questions in advance if they'd come on the show. So why won't they come on the show? Because I'm an all-around bad man? Well, that's their loss, not mine. And by the way, they're finding out right now that a couple of things that I predicted are true. A, nobody cares about these YouTube debates. It's dreck. No one's watching them. Number two, they have no traction. None of them have any real traction. These are fanatic left-wing groups that are giving these distorted numbers about Hillary's ahead of Obama, Obama's ahead of Edwards, Edwards down, Edwards up. It's all nonsense. It's one group providing the numbers. The American people are totally disconnected from this election. They're not going to make their minds up for a very long time, just like in the past. Thank you for the call, Lance. Do you realize that it is 17, almost 18 minutes after the hour? Now, what does that mean to you? Nothing. To me, it means I'm running 4 minutes late. So I'll be right back.
Savage.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. We're still talking about midgets. I don't know how this caught on. But remember what we're talking. If you just tuned in, I played an ad call. Play call for Philip Morris so we can bring everyone up to speed. Then we're going to go to an ad executive who's going to explain this.
You got it.
Now, okay. I personally am afraid of midgets. Ever since childhood I was. I remember going to the circus with my mother and getting caught outside Ringling Brothers in a huge mob, Madison Square Garden. And I lost her hand and I turned in the crowd and I thought I was holding her hand and I had touched the midget's hand and I was like, oh my God. Because I thought like midgetism was catching. Children have weird, you know, they're poor little people. They're born that way. But now why would you use a midget to sell cigarettes? I was asking. Naples, Florida, Gerard has an answer to this question. Go ahead, please.
Michael, when you and I were very, very young, Philip Morris Company was having a hard time pushing their product. They went searching.
Hold it. Call them back on a landline. Hey, this is such a good call. It can't be done on a cell phone because I can't listen to a cell phone. We'll go to Portland, Oregon. Alan, KXL Country, go ahead. What topic, please?
Yeah, I think the real reason the candidates won't come onto your show is because it's the same reason with why the CNN turned off the cameras at the Free Speech Award. They just don't want to provide you recognition.
Well, I understand that. That's how Stalinism works. The way the Stalinists worked in the ex-Soviet Union was to deny the opposition any presence whatsoever. When it gets more severe, they disappear a person, either in a death camp or they just kidnap them and kill them. And the way they kill you in this country is by denying your reality. You don't even exist. Now, I have 4 bestsellers in a row, and the people certainly know who I am. So what do I need CNN for? What do I need that little man Lamb for? He's a nobody. And what do I need these candidates for? Alan, remember, with any luck, I'll be around long after most of them. Only one of them is going to win. The rest of them are going to be forgotten to history. I'll still be in the radio.
Yeah, it's just disturbing because, I mean, and it's blatantly obvious.
I think you're right. That's their psychology. There's a word out to deny Michael Savage's existence. And by the way, you're probably right, because take San Francisco. Here you got the Chronicle, which records, let's say, 4 Aztecs beating up a white man with a picket sign will get front page news because they were oppressed minorities years ago when that man's ancestors stole their gold. Yet you have a protest of this magnitude, and Phil Brownstone has the audacity. He probably had a choice. Who does he serve? Which master? Does he serve the master of the illegal alien mobs and their communist hordes and show their protest? or does he deny me my moment, and he decided that his ego was bigger than his Marxism? You follow me?
I follow.
Yeah, of course you do. Thanks for the call. But his loss as well. Long after he's gone and the Chronicle is in the hands of a legitimate publisher or editor, in my opinion, I'll be on the radio. Every once in a while you see these guys, they try to go on television. They're awful. They don't have the capacity to be a broadcaster. They're jealous of me. But I don't want to talk about me anymore. Did he come back, the guy? I wish he would. We'll go to Nick on WOR. Nick, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Number one, there's 3 points on Johnny Philip Morris. One, he wasn't a midget. He was very frail and very thin. Two, hello, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Two, the costume that the advertisers put him in, with the page boy costume, went along with the times in the movies. If you look at it from the point, you had many Kipling movies coming out at that time, and they had little Indians in these same type page boy costumes.
Oh, like Gunga Din.
Like Gunga Din, Four Feathers, etc. And you always noticed them going, them, Sahib, we're going down with a message. What they were giving you with Philip Morris was bringing the manlyhood, the gentleman, and also the officer and soldier into the picture. Johnny was not, by the way, he lived in Brooklyn between Benson and 86th Street.
He lived in Sheepshead Bay. I read his obituary when he died.
Avenue between Benson and 86th Street. He used to give us, as teenagers, we used to get the 4 packs of cigarettes.
You know, for free. Remember those days that they gave out cigarettes for free in the streets? Do they still do that, or is that considered big tobacco?
I don't believe they do it, but the funniest thing, every time...
Oh, now they give out condoms in the kindergarten. Two guys come in a dress and give out condoms in a kindergarten, and they tell you they're holier than Mother Teresa. And if the father tries to block him, he goes to jail. Go look at my website. A father in Massachusetts objected to the homosexual mafia coming into the kindergarten class of his child. They put him in handcuffs and arrested him. That's how sick the state of Massachusetts is. That's how perverted these sickos are.
Eddie, my love, I love you so far.
Savage Nation, here's a very sad story in the sickest city on earth. San Francisco, family of teen shot by deputies files claim against Sonoma County Police. Now, the police were called by the parents because they had a violent child, a son, 16, a crazy person by all definition. They get there, the guy has a knife, a 2.5-inch knife in one hand and his brother in the other. You hear this? The sheriffs and a family member tried to grab the knife and restrain the sick child. A deputy uses pepper spray, no effect. This idiot starts kicking the deputies in the face and chest, waves the knife, kicks after the first gunshot, then stopped after being shot by the other deputy. And now, of course, the parents who had this sicko are suing the police. This is the country we live in. I don't know who could take this job called police, particularly with a sick press of the kind we have here. And the sick, sick, sick lawyers who are worse than the journalists. But let's go back to a different time, the Philip Morris ad psychology. Gerard in Naples, Florida. Gerard, you taught this?
Yes, I taught this in graduate school, in the graduate level advertising class.
Unbelievable. I would love to hear what you think was going on. Why did they use a midget to sell cigarettes?
Well, first of all, the fancy hotels in New York, like the Waldorf, the Ritz, the Plaza, they would hire little people. And they would put them in page uniforms, and these people would go out through the lobbies, the bars, and whatever, and page people for telephone calls. There was only one phone, and that was usually at the front desk.
So, in other words, he went out, the image of the little man with the tray, and he said, call for Philip Morris. He was going out in that era. There were little people going around saying, call for Joe Smith, call for Joe Smith. So it didn't really symbolize cigarettes then, is that correct?
Right. When it first came out, the tray really contained a little slip of paper, which was the person's name that was being paged. And then after time, I think they changed it and put a pack of cigarettes on it.
But so in other words, when a man was watching this little fella walking around saying, call for Philip Morris, what did they, what message were they getting?
This is what they were doing. If you were in one of these fancy hotels being paged to this one telephone, you were a very important person.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yes.
And if Johnny was coming after you, you had a phone call, he was saying, call for Philip Morris, theoretically somebody named Philip Morris would come pick up the phone.
So the linkage was the cigarette then.
Now there's a double entendre here, because they were trying to tell people in this unique selling proposition, when they go out to buy cigarettes, to call for Philip Morris.
Mm-hmm. So well, I don't know. It must have sold a lot of cigarettes.
Took them out of the dumps, made a very, very popular cigarette.
So that ad turned the company around. It's very interesting. You're an advertising. Were you an advertising executive, Jared?
Yes, pretty much my entire life.
Amazing. The psychology of advertising has interested me for many, many years. I've often wondered why people respond to certain images and certain suggestions. And, of course, it still goes on. It's all different, though, today. But the bottom line here is it's a matter of what? Making a man feel important? Is that what it was?
Sure. That's mm-hmm. what it was all about.
Because somebody said to me that it was something about sexuality, that he was small and it made a man feel bigger. Well, do you think that element was in it? Huh?
It had nothing to do with that. It was just
nothing.
To make a man feel important that he's being paged for a phone call.
Now, of the ads that are out there today, Jared, which would you consider to be psychologically the most interesting? Anything out there appeal to you on a really powerful level?
I don't like any of them. I think they're too rock and roll. I think I'm too dated.
I hear you. I it's interesting. I'll tell you, how about the caveman ads for Geico?
I feel badly for the caveman.
I love those ads. I think they're hilarious. The acting is wonderful. The sarcasm, the irony in the face of the guy playing the caveman when the psychologist says to him something, he says, yeah, like I have my mother on the phone. I'll put it on speaker. I think that's hilariously funny.
It is funny. It is fun.
And I mean, whoever created it does have a great sense of humor, and also I think harkens back to the great era of advertising, which would have to be the 1950s, wasn't it?
It actually started in the 40s, right after the war.
But, do you remember the dancing cigarette girls? Were they the Chesterfield girls with the legs sticking out of the package?
Luckies.
Huh?
I think those were the Lucky Strike dancing girls.
Yeah, that was very suggestive in its day.
Yeah, you had the regular and you had the 100s.
I don't know. I was such a little kid. I would see like girls' legs outside of a cigarette package. I had no idea why the men were looking at the screen.
You and me both.
Oh, you're a good sport, Jared. I'm really glad you listen to the show from time to time. Let me send you a free copy of the DVD, the Savage DVD. Portland, Oregon. Let's go to Oregon. Kerry, KXL Country. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Kerry, go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I was calling to tell you about a dream I had recently about me and my dogs running on the ocean, and you went out and saved them.
Okay, and what do you think it means?
I've been trying to figure that out. That's why I wanted to call you. What happened is I was running on the beach with my two basset hounds, and in real life, they can't swim. They just sink right down. But when they floated out in the ocean, they were just floating around. And before I knew it, I swam out there to get them. And then someone jumped out and swam in front of me, which it turned out to be you. But I didn't know it was you until you carried them both out of the water, you know, onto the beach. And I looked.
But wait. You saw my picture from the website or from the books? Is that it?
Exactly. I have all your books. I'm 35 years old. I've been listening to you for 7 years.
So I've taken on some kind of superhuman status in your mind. Again, because it's radio, you don't really know me, and so you can glorify me or romanticize me. And so in your mind, I'm some superhuman figure who can do miraculous things. And so in the deepest reaches of your mind, the thing you fear the most is losing the things you love the most, which are your dogs. And so you connect up the fear of loss with the hope for being saved, with the show you've come to listen to.
Exactly.
Doesn't that make sense? Yeah.
And because you're my hero, I think unconsciously that's why it became you. It was you that popped.
Well, if I told you I couldn't swim, would that kill the dream? I'm a very good swimmer. I'm just kidding. It's a funny thing you should bring this dream up, because I was thinking today that I've always been a very fine swimmer, and I thought about, why was I a good swimmer? And then I said, you know, my father was a great swimmer, and I don't know how he learned to swim, having been an immigrant, grown up in New York in the slums, basically. But he told me he used to swim in the East River in very fast, surgy water, and once a kid jumped into the East River, and his head got caught in a milk can, and he drowned to death. It's a great story that stuck in my mind. And I guess that taught me that I better learn to swim, or I might get stuck in a milk can. So because my father could swim well, I think I naturally took to the water, and I've always been a strong swimmer. It's amazing that this dream came up today. I'm not a lifeguard in any way, but I was always a good swimmer, and I was thinking about swimming today. Huh, so be it. Thanks for the call. Well, here we are, moving into the last segment of this hour. Governor signs budget. Look at this story. I intend to carry on. UK environmentalist who abandoned her attempt to row across the Pacific says she'll try again. So she didn't do it, and she's a hero for failing? It's astounding to me. SF Mayor Gavin Anytoosome Newsom presented giant slugger Barry Bonds with a key to the city. Great, Gavin. You phony, you empty suit. I'll be right back.
Savage.
For what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not to say a thing.
All right, turn it off. I'm not in the mood. So it's overamped for right now. I've just come back from Area 51. I'm not in the mood for that kind of Sinatra stuff. First of all, it's a bad recording. I'd rather not listen to it. You know, here's a long weekend coming up now. Dad, I'm not on the air. All my listeners are going to go, like, ballistic with emptiness, ennui, fear. And I'm going to miss the audience as much as they miss me. This becomes a bond that you can't believe. Now, what is the good news of the week? Let's get the good news out there. The good news is the Haditha Marines are being exonerated day by day because they didn't do anything wrong. They're our heroes. The other good news is that John Cooey was sentenced to death for the killing of then-12-year-old Jessica Lunsford. Listen to this clip, 12, the judge.
It is hereby ordered and adjudged as to count one of the indictment, and for the murder of Jessica Marie Lunsford, this court sentences you, John Evander Cooey, to death. It is further ordered and adjudged as to count two of the indictment, burglary of a dwelling with battery.
All right, let's stop. Yeah, it's not good enough. We live in too humane a society for a child rapist killer like this. That's not good enough. Lethal injection. And then what's going to top it off is when the psychos from NYU and Dalt Law School, the Dalt Law School brigades of psychos, the drugged up maniacs who can memorize well, are going to come out and start with the candles outside San Quentin for 20 years. I don't know what's going to happen. One father who lost a daughter is going to go berserk with that crowd one of these days. I hope it doesn't happen, but it will. And then maybe the country will wake up to the fact that we can't take it anymore. No, that's not good enough that he was sentenced to death. This man not only raped this little girl, but he buried her alive with her favorite little toys. This is the kind of man we are talking about. Threw her in a shallow grave while she was alive and crying, clutching her favorite little toys. You're telling me he deserves a jail cell? You're telling me he deserves psychologists and lawyers? No, he deserves to be stripped naked and put into the exercise yard at Pelican Bay. And the guard should be given 5 minutes off for a coffee break. And the worst of the worst should be released from the deepest, darkest cells in the exercise yard and be given a year off their sentence if they macerate him. Macerate him with their hands and their teeth. That might be the best. But no, that's not good enough. Let me think a little longer. That would be too quick a death. How about releasing him to the pit bulls that they're going to euthanize, Vic's pit bulls, on pay-per-view television? Would that work for you? Cooey should be put into an exercise yard naked and crying for 24 hours with the sounds of the dogs howling and barking, telling and everyone knowing what's going to happen to him. He should live with it for 24 straight hours that he's going to be torn to pieces, including his private part ripped off by the dogs. That might be a fitting end. No, that's not good enough. Nope. We have to go back to ancient Rome for the proper execution of this man, this child rapist. He should be tied and bound inside a bag, a burlap bag, with his hands tied and his feet tied. And in the bag, there should be a crazed mad dog, a poisonous snake, a poisonous spider, and other crazed animals. Then he should be thrown into a raging river. That might be the right way to end this kind of molestation or rape of our children. There's no other way to say it. Unless we punish them in the most severe and inhumane ways, they will continue to hurt our children over and over and over again. The only reason they're doing it is because the laws are so perverse. The lawyers are so powerful. The judges themselves are so compliant with the perverse legal system that they can get away with this over and over and over again. Now, having said that to you, I had a story up on michaelsavage.com this week that I don't think is still up there. You don't have to put it up again. But remember, I've been complaining about this perverted justice series on NBC, and I said something was wrong with it. Remember now, for like a few months, I said there's something wrong with the host. There's something wrong with the way the cops slam the guys to the ground when they're absolutely of no danger. The whole thing was sick with the entrapment. It turned out that the producer of that show himself, let us put it to you this way, is suspect. Because in the state where this was done, it is a crime to do exactly what they've been doing, which is to be, this guy who produced it was acting like a little boy and saying, "Hi, come in, I'm just doing some laundry. Come on in." That it's actually a crime to act out that role. And I hope they put him in jail, along with the host of the show, by the way. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of them. I think they're the predators. Oh, sure, these guys are bad and they should be stopped. But you're telling me that NBC and that guy Brian, whatever his name is not a predator? A media predator? You mean there are no media predators? You're telling me there are no media predators? You take a look at the eyes of Nancy Graceless. That's not the eye of a whack job? Or a Scarface isn't a whack job? What do you have, Misty? Play Misty for me now.
Look at me.
Oh, God. I get all the crazy people now. Oh, this is a Nat. Now, I used to love Nat King Cole. I don't like this one too much. I like a chestnuts roasting on an open fire much better. It evokes Central Park, snow on the face, warm clothing, subway rides, wet shoes, galoshes, chestnuts, homework, geometry, algebra, the smell of a review book when you first got it. Oh, no, this is too swishy for me. Please turn this one off. Mobile, Alabama. Doug, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I got a proposed solution. Not really a solution, but a sentence for all the child molesters out there.
Go ahead. Get it out of your system.
Okay, I'd like to say that you put each of them in a Mississippi State prison with a guy named Bubba.
Mm-hmm. For how long?
For as long as they need to be in there, probably the rest of their life, because what I've heard about it is that is a disease that you cannot cure.
No, it's incurable. They have to be castrated to begin with if they have not hurt anybody. If they're continuous predators but they haven't hurt anybody, just castration would work. But we're talking about levels way beyond that. This man raped this little girl. He then buried her alive with her little toys. You know the story, don't you, Doug?
I just heard it, sir.
No, I mean, what kind of monster like this deserves humane treatment? That's all. Well, let's not get into this. It's liberalism that's killing the whole country. Liberalism that has everything upside down. They're all mentally ill. They attack a man like me, and they have sympathy for a rapist like this and a murderer. They attack like a man like me, and they have sympathy for a man like Hugo Chavez. Look, we're fighting for our life here. It's a civil war. It's been brewing a long time, and eventually it's going to get down to it eventually. Eventually, it's going to come down to us against them in a most demonstrable fashion, and they're going to lose. It's as simple as that. Cincinnati, Ohio. John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Well, Savage, you're the greatest, and I think the only reason people don't want to come on your show is because you would ask questions that they wouldn't want to answer, and they're not intelligent enough to.
What question would I ask of Romney or Giuliani that they're afraid of? What question could I possibly ask them?
Afraid of. Many questions.
Well, what I ask Romney? I'm not going to ask about his Mormonism. I don't consider that a fair question. His religion is his religion. I wouldn't ask him that. I would ask him about his flip-flopping on abortion or his flip-flopping on gay marriage, for example. Where does he really stand, and why did he take one position and now another? People do evolve and change, by the way. I'd like to hear him say, yes, I had a different opinion then, but I've since studied the issues, and I believe it's harmful, and I would ask him, why is it harmful? Why don't you support it now? And are you sure you're not doing... I mean, it's pretty easy. I wouldn't be particularly difficult. These are questions that must be asked. How are you really going to secure the border? What do you think about George Bush not using the money to hire the number of Border Patrol agents he said he would hire and not using the money to build a fence along the border that he was given the money to do so? I mean, why not answer those questions? They're not so hard to answer.
But they don't want to answer them.
Well, then we're going to have another continuation of more of the same thing, which is sort of a fictional candidate becoming a fictional president with a fictional republic. And we cannot afford a fictional republic for another 8 years. We cannot afford another 8 years of a fictional republic or there'll be nothing left. We cannot make it a world safe for Goldman Sachs. That's all I can say. And I have nothing against Goldman Sachs. I'm all in favor of capitalism. But you cannot permit the bottom line to dictate whether or not a nation shall retain its sovereignty. At a certain point, you have to say to the money boys, you know what, my friend? This country is sovereign, borders, language, and culture. And we're going to let you make as much money as you have to make, but you're not going to do it while risking the sovereignty of this nation. That's it. Now get out of the White House. You've had a good run. Now get out of here. That day has to come. There's a way to have capitalism without letting the capitalists destroy the sovereignty of a nation. And I don't know why anyone's never said that. Why don't you ask the candidates about that? How do they feel about Goldman Sachs running the world or another investment bank? How do you feel about a Treasury secretary like Jon Snow, who gave us a snow job and almost got Dubai Ports to take over the security of our ports after he became Treasury Secretary, and then he quit right away and had another lucrative contract? I mean, the whole thing stinks from top to bottom. You want to talk specifics? Listen to this show. You want to talk generics? Go to Mexico or Canada where you can find plenty of them. With God's will and your listenership, we shall all be here on Monday. Till that time, God bless America. Savage.